WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. If you follow the stock market or other business news on television, you no doubt know my next guest. Maria Bartiromo is the anchor of CNBC's Closing Bell every weekday afternoon and the nationally syndicated Wall Street Journal report on Sundays. And with the second anniversary of the banking system meltdown coming next week, she has a new book called The Weekend That Changed Wall Street, an eyewitness account written with Catherine Whitney. Maria, so nice to have you on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Great to be here.
And it was, of course, the weekend of September 13th and 14th, 2008. The Treasury Secretary, Henry Paulson, Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke, and others were deciding whether to bail out Lehman Brothers and other high-stakes decisions. Where were you?
Well, I was at home and at the office on the phone talking with various players about what was going on. And what really occurred to me was the level of panic that there was, not only trying to save Lehman Brothers, but also trying to save a financial system that truly was on the verge of collapse. So I was working, covering the story, taking phone calls, making phone calls, and trying to figure out where exactly all this was going.
Take us back with 2 years of hindsight to the start of that meeting, of that weekend, the meeting that you write about on Friday, September 12th.
Well, basically, leading up to that weekend, there were a lot of worries about debt, about home prices plummeting, and the value of a lot of securities that were held on the books of these firms falling in value. So it was clear that the leverage had the potential to really wreck not only an industry, but take the financial system to its knees. So Timothy Geithner and Hank Paulson called an emergency meeting at the New York Fed and called the leaders of these investment banks to the Fed to discuss the possibility of Lehman not opening its doors come Monday. They wanted to get news out on Sunday night before the Asian markets opened to calm the markets, because they believed that if Lehman were to go bankrupt, that the market would spiral and we would have a real disruption and that would cause others to follow suit. It was panic-stricken. I remember John Mack, the head of Morgan Stanley at the time, telling me, you know, it was so important. We were driving from Midtown to downtown, and we were in bumper-to-bumper traffic because the weather was pretty tough. It was raining out very hard. And so his driver said, "Do you think that's a bus lane?" And John said, "Yeah, it is." And they took the bus lane all the way down and drove illegally to get there. It was that important. They needed to get there quickly to discuss the fate of the industry and really the world.
And listeners, if anybody listening works in the finance industry and wants to reflect on the meaning of September 15th and the days leading up to it, 2 years ago, now with 2 years of hindsight, or if anybody watches Maria Bartiromo on CNBC, has a question for her, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Her new book, The Weekend That Changed Wall Street, an eyewitness account. One of the enduring questions, and I was going to ask you this anyway, and there it is on the front page of the business section of the New York Times again today, is whether they decided as a matter of policy or politics to let Lehman fail, or whether they actually did not have the legal authority to save it, as they have claimed. Do you come to a conclusion about that?
Well, I think, number one, they did not have the authority to save it out and out. They needed some kind of a backstop from another firm, the way we saw the Bear Stearns situation unfold. The reason that Bear Stearns was able to be saved was because J.P. Morgan was there to acquire it. Of course, J.P. Morgan got an enormous help from the government. So that is partly true that they did not have the regulatory authority to actually out-and-out save Lehman. But I also think there was something else going on. And I think that Treasury and the Fed wanted some kind of evidence to show Congress this is real and we need the TARP money. And I think the fact that Lehman went bankrupt was a real big punch in the face for Congress so that Congress knew that this was one domino to fall. There would be others unless they got the TARP money.
Are you saying that on one level they allowed Lehman to fail and send the economy into the spiral that resulted to whatever degree from that act as political leverage to get $700 million of TARP money?
Well, partly, yeah, that's what I am saying. I think that, you know, on the one hand, there was not another buyer. That is absolutely true. You know, Dick Fuld tried to do a deal with the Koreans, tried to do a deal with private equity. A number of deals were sort of swirling about, Barclays, possibly Bank of America. But at the end of the day, none of those situations panned out because the leaders of those companies did not want to take on the so-called toxic assets, the assets that Lehman held, whether it be real estate or other assets that had seen their valuations plummet. So they needed money, the TARP money, and I think Hank Paulson wanted Congress to recognize this was real, and this was one way of doing it.
Do you think, with 2 years of hindsight, that it was a mistake to let Lehman go down? Do you come to a conclusion on that?
Well, I come to a conclusion on whether or not any one firm is too big to fail. And I don't think any one firm should be. And I don't necessarily think it is too big to fail as much as it is too connected to fail. We really did not recognize how connected our financial services industry was and is until we were on the verge of collapse. And to understand that AIG was, you know, insuring everything from the derivative swaps that we're talking about to, you know, the bridge down the block from your neighborhood is to really recognize how interconnected the system is. And if one man goes down, the whole system could come close to collapse.
And Geithner likes that term, too. He
yeah.
says he prefers too connected to fail over too big to fail.
And I think that's right because, you know, too big to fail indicates big is evil. And it's not necessarily true. I mean, you don't necessarily have to think that being a large corporation with various lines of business is a bad thing. It's really not.
But have we ended too connected to fail? You conclude in the book, right near the end, that we will not avoid another September 2008, despite the policy changes that have happened since
no,
then.
No, we have not ended too big to fail, too interconnected to fail. I think many of the new regulations in the financial regulatory reform that was passed this summer really did not address the things that actually got us here. Proprietary trading was not an issue. Too interconnected and too big to fail
the
was an issue.
The thing that the Volcker Rule does address,
that's
you're
right,
saying,
but that
didn't
had,
get us
absolutely.
Here.
That had nothing to do with the financial crisis. It makes you feel better knowing, I guess, that your deposits are not being invested and traded by the firms. But at the end of the day, it really doesn't do much.
So did liberal Democrats like President Obama and Barney Frank take a dive on, you know, what was actually needed to prevent another September 2008?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, frankly, I think that the financial crisis empowered a new sheriff in town and empowered a new administration to come up with new, heavier, bigger government, newer regulations. Whether or not the pendulum has swung too much in that direction is debatable. And I think we still have an issue of Fannie and Freddie and housing finance in this country that has not been addressed. And we still have an issue about too big to fail. So there are a lot of issues that remain unanswered, but certainly we have seen change nonetheless as a result of the financial crisis.
Maria Bartiromo, CNBC anchor, my guest on WNYC. Her new book is called The Weekend That Changed Wall Street, an eyewitness account. Obviously, that weekend 2 years ago, this coming weekend, when the financial crisis really hit. Jim in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hey, good morning, Maria. I've been watching you since it used to be the Financial News Network. My question is, again, why didn't the government or someone do something about regulating the hedge funds? I've had, personally, the best year I've ever had in the market since I got out and when the dot-com thing was failing, only by following and watching what they do. They knock down these stocks down to unbelievably lows, then they throw them up to unbelievably highs. They're controlling about 75 or 80% of all the stocks traded right now. They've made it so the small investor was so scared he'll never go back into the markets. It's great for people like me that watches them and plays the casino right, but I still think they should be regulated.
Yeah, the hedge funds actually have seen more regulation over the last 2 years. And with this new bill that has been passed into law, there also will be more oversight on the large hedge funds. Smaller hedge funds, you're right. I mean, they remain out there in somewhat of the shadow, as they call it, the shadow banking system. But there has been a stepped-up regulatory environment for the hedge fund community. But, you know, the hedge fund community will tell you that this is a private way of investing. It's not for the average investor, and that they do not fall under the same category. I tend to disagree and actually agree with you, because if, in fact, we have something go awry, it can cause a market disruption, which, of course, impacts all of us.
You quote a source who said Lehman CFO Aaron Callan may have been the trader who leaked Lehman's need for quick cash to the Wall Street Journal. When was that leak, and why was it important?
Well, it was important because we're in an environment where the rumors are swirling about Lehman Brothers and how safe and secure Lehman Brothers was, and whether or not it did, in fact, have the financial wherewithal to continue on its own. And there was a Wall Street Journal article written by Sue Craig, which said Lehman is on the hunt for cash. And Lehman is talking to the Koreans and talking to other international investors looking to raise cash. That was new information. That was basically saying Lehman needs money. And it basically indicated the weakness of Lehman. Later on, we learned that Sue Craig and Aaron Callan had been emailing and had been talking, and the speculation within the firm was that Aaron Callan was the one who told Sue Craig, thinking that that would be a positive for the firm.
Yeah, so it doesn't make her a traitor. She was trying to save the company.
Of course. She thought she would be saving the company, but allowing such information that Lehman was actually looking for cash out publicly, allowing that to get out there, basically opened up the firm to we need money, and it actually worked against what she expected.
From our comments page, a listener posting as Danger Will Robinson. Do you read your comments pages, by the way?
Sometimes.
Do you get a lot?
Yeah.
Danger Will Robinson asks, if she has so much insight into financial matters, why didn't she see the financial sector collapse before it happened?
Well, it's a great question, and I think there's a lot of blame to go around. You know, we were in a moment in time where fundamentals really did not matter, and I think that this is another reason I think that you can't avoid another blow-up. You know, here we are in an environment, 2004, 5, 6, where housing prices keep going up. Was there any reason that prices kept going up? Pick any city. Let's try, you know, Phoenix, Arizona. Home prices up 40% year over year. Is there any reason, anything that changed in Phoenix that really created an environment where housing prices should be up 40%? Well, no. Was the infrastructure any better? No. Was the school system any better? No. It was just this mania where everyone believed and fell into the idea that home prices would keep going up. And so, you know, and that's not just the media. That's not just the, I mean, that's the person who said, okay, here's the American dream. I want to own a home.
Right.
It doesn't matter that I don't have a job. Or Barney Frank in Washington
right.
saying, look, this is the American dream. Everybody should have this.
But you and your colleagues, not to single you out as an individual, but people at CNBC, people at the Wall Street Journal, people in the professional business media could be held to a higher standard than people in the general media who maybe, you know, look to one thing one day and something else another day and say, did you guys miss it? Or did you drink the Kool-Aid and were doing rah-rah instead of journalism?
I don't believe so. I've got to push back on that. You know, CNBC has 14 hours of live programming every day. At any given moment in time, you could have turned on CNBC and seen me talking to George Soros, who said this is a house of cards about to collapse, or Peter Schiff, who said the same thing. Or, you know, you could have watched Angelo Mozilla from Countrywide saying, you know, this is the American dream. You need to do it, and you need to buy a home. So at any moment in time, to say that the media missed it, I think, is not actually giving the media the credit of perspective, because CNBC has 14 hours of live programming a day, and we've had both sides of every situation on, and we have both sides on every day. I think we did it then. And I've got to tell you, I actually give credit to the media. I think the Wall Street Journal, the Financial Times, CNBC, I think the investment media and the financial media handled this crisis quite well, making people accessible, explaining an issue that was many times complex. So I actually have to push back and disagree on that.
Does CNBC do anything differently today because of what happened? You often get knocked as, you know, an adrenaline-fueled cheerleader network for buying stocks rather than a legitimate news organization.
Yeah, but then, you know, but then during downturns, you know, we get, oh, you're the bearer of bad news. So, you know, I think everybody would like to blame the messenger. Sure, I think one thing that I walk away from this crisis from, and I want to make sure to take, you know, accountability and responsibility for, you know, whatever role I may be able to be helpful here. I think I walk away saying I want to be more of a contrarian. I want to be more of a skeptic. You know, Jim Rogers, the international investor, has told me, Marie, you have to be a skeptic. You have to look at a situation. Remember, fundamentals matter. And that's what I was just saying about the home prices in Phoenix. Fundamentals matter. You know, just like the internet boom, where we were all looking at dot-coms at the end of companies' names and thinking, you know, hits to a website was more important than earnings and revenue. Well, it's not. Fundamentals matter. And if a situation looks too good to be true, it probably is. And so I think you go back to the most basic of lessons in investing.
Let me get one more caller in here for you. Judy in Westchester, you're on WNYC with Maria Bartiromo. Hello.
Hello. My question is, you are very critical of the Obama administration in your programming. I have watched it since he was elected. I would like to know what you think he's done wrong or could do better.
Well, I think right now the public wants solutions, and obviously job creation is number one on the agenda. I think, you know, most people will tell you that unemployment is going to be an issue for some time to come, certainly throughout 2010 and into 2011. And I think part of the reason is business executives are reluctant to add new heads to the payroll, and that's because they are worried about higher health care costs and they are worried about higher taxes. I try to take the other side on every situation so that my viewers can hear both sides of the situation. So for you to think that I am critical, I certainly have been critical when there is a one-sided situation there that I have to bring up the other side. I think right now people would like to see jobs truly being the number one point on the president's agenda, and we haven't seen that. Healthcare has been the number one point on the president's agenda since he began his office. The stimulus package was also very important. But I think right now, with an unemployment situation that is arguably 16% of the country out of a job, people really want to see support for the business community so that they will actually create jobs in the private sector, something we really haven't seen yet.
So in our last minute, quick comment on the news of the day, because you know the president is unveiling his new business tax credit, also a new infrastructure creation and maintenance plan. These are seen as jobs programs. Will the business community react positively
to
those?
These are very long-term projects. When you talk about building bridges and paving roads, these are 10, 20-year projects. We're not going to see job creation in that regard in the next couple of weeks, in the next couple of months, perhaps not even in the next year. So I do believe that we do need more stimulus, and job creators out there are probably going to hear a lot about that going into the November midterm elections. But, you know, there's a question about, you know, how, you know, the timing of this now as opposed to a year and a half ago. I hope that this works. Obviously, I would like to see businesses add jobs to the payroll because it's something that this country desperately needs. Instead, corporations are sitting on a record amount of cash, $1.8 trillion in cash, and where are they putting it to work? In places like Beijing, in places like Brazil, and in India, because that's where the growth has been. They need to put that money to work in the U.S. They need policies in place, federal policies in place, in order to actually get jobs moving again.
Maria Bartiromo, anchor of CNBC in the late afternoons when the stock market closes, of the Wall Street Journal Report on NBC every Sunday, and author now of The Weekend, The Changed Wall Street, an eyewitness account. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, we will look at infographics made by some of you about people's moves, their homes, where they've moved to and from in our area over the last 10 years, including what one designer calls the Manhattan diaspora. Stay with us.